Son, oh my.
It was fun to channel surf. It was kind of hard to do a little pocket pool after you're hitting the last channel button 50 times for 2 hours plus.
Son, oh my.
And his whole idea of overanalyzing, oh, he's an alcoholic and he misplaced the belt. And how could you have someone champion like that? The fuck out of here.
Wednesday night?
Don, oh my. You're gonna have fun. You really are. Let's talk about CM Punk for a little while, shall we? Let's talk about this nonsensical drama, which some of you may end up calling a nothing burger. Well, it's not necessarily a nothing burger, but obviously overly inflated because of an obvious reason that we've been talking about for quite some time. Over the last 7 days, the majority of AEW noise out there has to do with CM Punk and Ryan Nemeth being sent home, confrontation, Matt Hardy being sent home, the comments CM Punk made towards Hangman Page. Now, make no mistake about it, I am not this big avid supporter of CM Punk. Over the years, I have criticized him 10 times over than I have praised him. Obviously, one of the greatest pro wrestlers of this generation as far as having all the tools, talking, telling a story, selling, giving offense, you know, defense. You know, he's got all the tools. Obviously, money drawer for AEW, biggest draw, merchandise seller. He's got all the tools. Obviously, the top guy in that company. And unfortunately, my friends, there are a lot of people in the elite media world and many people within AEW that cannot stand CM Punk. Most of them want you to believe that the reason why AEW remains as it is and doing bigger and better and going forward is because of Kenny Omega, because of the Young Bucks, because of their friends, because of Tony Khan, because of execs behind the scenes, because of, you know, wrestlers all looking for the betterment of the company. They will put out a big list, not just the elite, as long as CM Punk's name is not included with it. CM Punk cannot be considered an authoritative figure. He's not part of AEW authority, even though he is, my friends. Whether you like it or not, whether you want to admit it or not, CM Punk is a big part of the authority in Collision. Some may call it a locker room leader. Yeah, I know a lot of the negative noise drowns out a lot of the positive noise, but there are quite a few people within AEW that go to CM Punk that actually respect the guy. CM Punk is someone who you don't find much anymore in the world of pro wrestling. Someone that'll tell you like it is. If you want an honest opinion, he will give it. If there's a problem, he will not stick his tail between his legs because he's worried about losing his job or money or future or an opportunity. He will fucking say what is on his mind, and he doesn't care with the ramifications. Now, yeah, that is a good thing, but that also could be a big negative. But whether you want to admit it or not, Warner Media, Tony Khan have a tremendous amount of respect for CM Punk, have a tremendous amount of stock within CM Punk. Unfortunately for Tony Khan, that cannot be as visible as it truly is for the simple reason that he needs Kenny Omega. He needs the Young Bucks. He has decided since day one to put a lot of these individuals in very, very, very important positions within that company. He's got to pay them what they want. He's got to coddle them. He's got to deal with them. And he's got to try to have a balance. And unfortunately for Tony Khan, he cannot get them all in the same room and say, listen, we all work for AEW. We all want this company to be better. You don't have to like each other, but respect what each other is trying to do for the better of the company. No, Tony Khan would rather just keep them separate. Tony Khan does not like confrontation. Tony Khan seems like a very nice guy. Tony Khan is living in a fantasy world, which is AEW. You don't see the goofy tweets when he talks about his football team. You don't see the goofy tweets when he talks about his advertising business. You don't see the goofy tweets in anywhere except for the pro wrestling world. You look at people from Big Swole to others where they never even got the respect of Tony Khan looking at them in the eye and telling them, listen, you know, it's not working out, got to let you go. For whatever reason, it has to either be done through a tweet, or you get people like Chavito and others that say, oh, you know, I would see Tony Khan never called me back. I contacted Tony Khan, he never got back to me. So we all need to understand that if Tony Khan wants to build an empire with a tremendous amount of flaws in it, I am in no position to tell him to do otherwise. You are in no position to tell him to do otherwise. If he wants to build something imperfect, something that has a tremendous, you could see there could be so much more upside if this would be done, or this would be addressed, or this would be, someone would step up and, you know, straighten this shit out. If he wants to run it the way he has, that's his prerogative. It's his company. It's not publicly traded. He can do whatever he wants to do with this company. The guy could go off on the deep end and do radical, ridiculously moronic, asinine decisions publicly, and that is his right. Maybe the network would be the only ones that might be able to get through his head to be like, hey, you don't straighten this shit out. You know, we don't know what our future will be with you. Then you got to start thinking otherwise. But you know what? It's not going to be many years away before, you know, streaming media is going to be the way that a lot of people go, even with live programming. You know, you think advertising revenue is priority number one when they're on television for Tony Khan? No, for the networks it is, but for Tony Khan, nah, just as long as he doesn't lose his shirt, as long as he doesn't embarrass himself, as long as, you know, he's enjoying what he sees on TV, he's content. That's why, if you remember, I mean, he hasn't done it in a recent memory, but I remember with Samoa Joe versus maybe Minoru Suzuki. I don't remember who it was. Actually, I don't think it was Minoru Suzuki. I think it might have been someone else, and he wrote that this was a personal fantasy match of his. And he has done that a few times in the last couple of years. And, yeah, it's all nice and everything, but you realize that, you know, some of what you see is not necessarily because the fans truly are clamoring for it. It's because he clamors for it. And that's perfectly fine. But something more about CM Punk. And by the way, welcome everyone to this edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite. Today's episode is kind of a carbon copy of last week's formula. You know, last week we had a more discussion show focused on topics and controversy rather than TV results and review, because everybody and their mother does that. You know, last week it was about Lufisto. Yeah, last week it was about the women's division. Last week it was about smoke and mirrors. And it's also about the mindset of the people within AEW, especially Tony Khan, who over the years has not been this big proponent for women's wrestling. You know, in hindsight, this might be the best shot of women getting more opportunity on TV because of all the discussion that is going on. So this week we're going to talk about this latest drama with CM Punk, and I'm not going to beat around the bush. Some of it, he definitely fucked up, no question. But there's also a few things that went on that if it wasn't for certain journalists out there, you would be left with such an incomplete story out there, and they are baiting. Let me tell you something. There are some people out there that are baiting, trying to get CM Punk to open his mouth and say something horrendously stupid on social media or have a physical confrontation with someone or just embarrass himself. And I know what some of you are going to say. Well, the Hangman Page comments last week was quite embarrassing. I agree. It absolutely, there was no reason to do it. Some people said it was because he saw a sign in the crowd that said Hangman was right. That is one individual fan in a building with 6,000 people. And you focus on that one fan and say some dumb shit. Then afterwards, you tweet an apology to Hangman Page. And yes, they still are not talking. But CM Punk does have Hangman's number and sent him a tweet that went unanswered. And that's perfectly fine. But there's a lot of other things that went on this week that if you would have left it to the elite media, they would have made you believe only half the story. That's why in recent year or two, I've been plugging Fightful a lot more. I'm not friends with them. I don't get paid. I don't get anything free. I just tell it like I see it. You know, they want to post the news in a very fair and balanced way. And yes, there are a lot of faces there that people don't get along with. But you don't have many choices out there. Bill Apter, I love Bill Apter to death, but Bill Apter is, you know, pretty much, I don't want to say retired, but he's part-time and he covers wrestling in a different way. He's not going to, you know, report all this gossip and address it, acknowledge it, clear it up, dispute it. That's not his, you know, style. It's not what he does in 2023. Wade Keller has proven that his disdain for CM Punk gets in the way of a lot of his honest reporting. Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, we don't need to go there. You know, that leaves Mike Johnson, Dave Shearer. You know, really, who does it leave beyond that? You know, some, you know, regular podcasters out there that, you know, just show up in a media scrum and get a badge and they're not necessarily a journalist. They just read what other websites report or they react to it. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, we don't have this tremendous selection of insider journalists that we could get all the news, you know, unbiased. That's why put over Fightful more than anything else, because they actually filled in a lot of blanks this week about what went down. Case in point, Ryan Nemeth, the brother of Dolph Ziggler. You know, he is on the Young Bucks podcast quite often, being the elite. And what a lot of people perceived was to, you know, get a little bit more in favor with his buddies and defend his buddies. He tweeted not too long ago, taking a shot at CM Punk. And he wrote on Twitter, literally the softest man alive, as a shot to CM Punk. So when they were in Chicago not too long ago, CM Punk went up to Ryan Nemeth. Because CM Punk is not going to stick his tail between his legs and leave it alone and go through a third party. He went right up to him. Why did you do that? And Ryan Nemeth told him, I was just trying to get heat on myself with everything that's going on. And CM Punk said, listen, you know, even though I'm not talking to those guys, they don't want to talk to me. We're trying to calm things down a little bit. And your tweet doesn't help the situation. Now, a week ago, all you heard, CM Punk, Ryan Nemeth was sent home from Collision, was booked and unbooked. CM Punk didn't want him there. And that's it. So now you find out that not only did CM Punk and Ryan Nemeth discuss this, but they also shook hands about it afterwards. Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy, very recently, was booked for AEW Collision, along with Isaiah Cassidy. And they had to travel, and then they were unbooked. That's all it was. What happens? You get that elite media that cannot stand CM Punk, that absolutely refuse to allow anyone to think that CM Punk is the authority figure within AEW. We are perceived that it has something to do personally with CM Punk. And then what happens? Matt Hardy to have some fun with it. And yes, this is also because of the recent confrontation that he had with Jim Cornette and Brian Last when AEW Dynamite drew 800,000 plus on Wednesday. Matt Hardy went on Twitter and said, thanks to all the great AEW wrestling fans that made Dynamite the number one most watched show in AEW this week. We appreciate you. And what happens right away? People calling him out for taking shots at Collision, taking shots at CM Punk. And Matt Hardy had to address a lot of these folk. And Matt Hardy told them, you know, pretty much, I mean, you have to do it only on social media, but Matt Hardy pretty much told them, you guys want to have fun, you know, go with this conspiracy theory, you want to believe the shit that you read, go right ahead. But he claims that it had nothing to do with that. I'll give you one response that he said. He addressed someone with the Twitter account named Fuck the Elite. And he says, your username explains your weird obsession with Dynamite. I want AEW to succeed and become the number one company in wrestling. I wish for all shows, Dynamite, Rampage, and Collision, to obtain success. I am extremely a proud member of the Dynamite roster, which unselfishly works for the greater good of the show and the company. I'm also proud of the badass match my brother and I had with the Young Bucks last week. I'm sorry that you're lost and latching on a literal conspiracy theory. Hope you get better. So if you leave things incomplete, you get a lot of the nonsensical bullshit that you see over the last week. I'll give you another one. There's a lot of C and D list wrestling news websites out there, and we've already discussed the past week about Twitter and the sinkhole that it's turned into, this septic tank, because of the fact that they're now paying ad revenue, you know, based on a certain number of views that you get. So people are just writing anything to get someone to view on it. We've discussed some of the most ridiculous examples. But in the last couple of days, you got all these C and D list sites saying that, you know, a lot of people are very, very upset with an AEW right now with CM Punk, because all the discussion online is about CM Punk and his issues with the locker room instead of All In. With all due respect, it is the same D-list sites that are focusing on CM Punk to get the views. The haters out there are focusing on CM Punk to push their agenda. I'll give you another one. S.E. Scoops. This was a doozy. And they write, you know, with piss yellow color. You go look it up. Go on Twitter search. Just look up S.E. Scoops. AEW talent unhappy. And they put it all in piss yellow color. And everything else is written in white. AEW talent unhappy with Tony Khan's plans for AEW All In. And it's left at that. And basically, you know, they want to keep this controversy out there, and they blame a lot of it on CM Punk. Now, AEW All In is right around the corner at Wembley Stadium, August 27th, 2023. Today is August 16th, so it's 11 days away. They already have 80,000 plus tickets sold. I promise you, my friends, some AEW talent will be disappointed that they were not part of Wembley. But unless you're going to have a gigantic battle royale where all the men on the roster, and then a second battle royale with all the women on the roster get to perform, a lot of people are going to be left home. And it's not just the size of their roster. It is a lot of money to fly these wrestlers to the United Kingdom, plus lodging, plus everything else, and then flying them back. So this is with like any other pay-per-view out there. If WWE, you know, Clash at the Castle, go back at Clash at the Castle and go look at the names that were not on that show. I'm sure they were all disappointed. But right now with All In, you know, they have five matches announced. We know how AEW operates. with all their pay-per-views. Many times they book two, three, four matches literally 2 days before the event. Rampage notoriously has a match or two added, announced during Rampage. The Dynamite, right before a pay-per-view, they'll add two, three, four matches. This is nothing different with AEW. And right now they have Aussie Open defending the Ring of Honor tag titles against MJF and Adam Cole. And by the way, that is a dark match. That should give you a sign that something deceiving may be going down that during that match. Why it's a dark match, I mean, come on. That's a little crazy. But I think once Dynamite happens today, once it happens next week, we'll have a little bit more clear vision as far as what is going down with MJF and Adam Cole. You have FTR defending the tag titles against the Young Bucks. You got Hikaru Shida versus Tony Storm versus Saraya versus another individual. I believe it's the winner of Britt Baker and, oh God, I can't remember who the match was going to be. It was Britt Baker and the Bunny. Nothing against the Bunny, anyone, but you think the bunny is going to go to Wembley and be in that ring with Tony Storm, Sheeta, and Saraya? Oh, no. Talk about predictable, predictable, predictable. Of course Britt Baker is going to be in that match. Then you got Darby Allin and Sting versus A.R. Fox and Swerve Strickland with Prince Nana in a tag team coffin match. And then right now, your main event, MJF defending the AEW World Championship against Adam Cole. There is a lot to be determined still. And CM Punk's name hasn't even been thrown into the mix as of yet. So this bait of AEW talent unhappy and trying to insinuate, you know, the obvious is reckless and it's terrible. The only reason why people are not talking about All In as much as they should is because people out there choose to talk about anything but. But let's also be honest. If none of this happened in the last week with CM Punk, and even let's say CM Punk did iron things out with the Elite, how much would we be talking about All In right now? Outside of doing TV results and a review from Dynamite and progression from tonight's Dynamite, and this is now, I'm doing this obviously Wednesday afternoon. You know, there's not as much to talk about as you think. We don't have these really deep storylines outside of MJF and Adam Cole. You know, the Young Bucks and FTR, I mean, that really hasn't been a storyline, but obviously, you know, if it gets tied in with CM Punk in some way, which I don't know if it will. But, you know, people just choose what they want to talk about. But this is something that I really, 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 really want to stress. And this is probably the biggest point of my CM Punk discussion for this week. And I touched on it yesterday on Patreon a little bit, and I'm going to touch on it now. Jack Perry, Jungle Boy, and CM Punk recently had a disagreement, and it involved glass. Now, the situation was resolved, but the way it's perceived online, who the fuck is CM Punk to tell Jack Perry what to do and what not to do? You know, I brought up The Undertaker yesterday. And in no way, shape, or form am I saying that CM Punk is a locker room leader like Undertaker used to be. But let's also be honest. There were stories about people's bags getting thrown into the street. Yeah, The Miz, Muhammad Hassan, and others may have been very, very immature at that time, and maybe they deserved some of the treatment that they received. But whether people want to admit it or not, CM Punk is the guy for Collision. He is that locker room leader. He is the one that is managing the ship He doesn't have stock in the company. He doesn't have a title like that. But he is that leader. And there's a lot of people that can't stand that. They will not acknowledge it. They will ignore it. They will try to disparage it. Why do you think some people this week felt it was kind of bizarre how Tony Khan was asked about CM Punk and he was ecstatic and excited to have CM Punk back? And some people, I didn't see any, but I want to make this clear, I didn't see anything wrong with Tony Khan's comments on CM Punk. It was very quick. But the reason why some people thought it was almost like, does Tony Khan even have a clue of some of the shit that's been going on with CM Punk? It's as if, you know, Tony Khan said this the day after he made the announcement that CM Punk was returning. Like, he's just overly excited. And, you know, some people are like, oh, he's going to turn heel. Yeah, sooner or later, Tony Khan is going to be the next Eric Bischoff, what Bischoff was to the NWO. He's going to be that heel guy on TV. And if he turns on the Elite, the founding fathers of the company, it's going to look like Bischoff turning his back on WCW, joining the NWO. We talked about that 2 years ago. It's happening, guys. We don't know when, but it's happening. This is sports entertainment. That is a major storyline that people would fucking lose their shit over, whether they loved it, they love the turn, or they hate the turn. That would be major. It'll happen. I guarantee you it'll happen. But with Jack Perry, this exposes a bigger issue. I know some people are not going to like what I'm about to say, but I truly believe deep down inside people can't help but to admit it. What I'm saying is true. Now, I plugged Fightful earlier because they are very, very unbiased in a lot of these discussions. Yeah, they will boast and tell you, you know, you should pay for our shit. You know, join our Patreon because we put the unbiased, but hey, they back it up. Now, I don't do this rarely ever, but I'm going to read word for word something that they reported about CM Punk and Jack Perry, because I don't want to leave anything out, but I also want to expose a bigger problem. And you'll understand why CM Punk is absolutely needed on Collision right now, not just as an on-air talent, but to be that guy behind the scenes. Towards the start of CM Punk's Collision run, at the Canada tapings, Jungle Boy Jack Perry was brought in to film a segment. The two words had the two had words about plans, an idea that Jack Perry was pushing, supposedly pushing. According to those on the side of CM Punk, Jack Perry wanted to use real glass for a backstage segment. CM Punk was of the belief that he did this so he did not need to come to work the next week, which he sees as a bigger problem in the company. All right, so let's stop there. So whatever this was, I guess Jack Perry was going to be attacked or be jumped. And he wanted to use real glass because if it's real glass and he's bloodied up, you know, fans in storyline would say, oh, he'll be in no condition to perform next week, so he gets a week off. Okay, let's continue. We weren't given clarity as to whether or not this was because the spot was dangerous or because Jack Perry would have fulfilled a needed date ahead of time. Sometimes AEW does pre-tapes on previous shows to air the next week. Let's stop there. Basically, since this was a backstage segment, Jack Perry wanted to film this segment, wanted it to be glass, and then it would possibly film the or play off on the TV the following week So why would Jack Perry need to be there the next week if the segment that he taped was going to air the following week? Got it so far? Okay. Per CM Punk's side of things, Jack Perry was going against production. Doctors and Tony Schiavone was advising Jack Perry not to do it and telling him that smashing real glass is a safety hazard. And Jack Perry was not happy with that. Shortly after, guidelines were put in place and forwarded to talent that things required clearance. Let's stop there. Do you remember that list that we talked about a couple of weeks ago? You know, the thumbnail where I showed Hangman Page taking a beer from a fan and I said, that's banned. Apparently, part of Jack Perry wanting to use real glass, you know, led in some shape or form this list to be sent to all the wrestlers that you cannot do these things without clearance first. So CM Punk took it upon himself. He stepped in and calmly said that they don't do that on Saturdays. And if Jack Perry doesn't like it, he could stay on Wednesdays. Word of the situation had made its way around the locker room and was referred to as an argument. CM Punk's claim was that Jack Perry was throwing a temper tantrum over the spot not being cleared and people trying to prevent it. Fightful reached out to Jack Perry. He did not respond. Bravo to Fightful. That is something you and I have talked about repeatedly over the last couple of years. You look at some of these other journalists, you never hear them say, we reached out to CM Punk, we reached out to Kenny Omega, we reached out to Tony Khan, we reached out to Ace Steel, we reached out to you. That's absent in a lot of people's reports. Because if they're told the truth, and the truth goes against their bias or agenda, or it makes what they're reporting put a period after it instead of a comma so they can milk it for a month or two or 6 months, you know, they don't do it. So anyway, in conclusion, Fightful says, we weren't told how the situation ended, but several that we heard from agreed with the stance that CM Punk had taken. For those claiming that the tweet was misrepresentative of the story, it was called an argument by numerous people familiar with the situation. Okay. I have nothing against Jack Perry, but we've had this conversation before about just the overall attitude, not just in pro wrestling, but in society. For the last 20-some-odd years, we talk about snowflakes. Back then, my phrase that I used was the pussification of America. Not too long ago, you heard about, you know, more about adult coloring books, colored pencils, being able to draw in a corner at a college campus, drawing on sidewalks, hot chocolate. You know, unfortunately, in this day and age, there are more and more people that do not respect authority. You know, we've seen the controversy with Hangman Page not too long ago, and he's far from the only person that he doesn't need the opinions of legends or those that paved the way before him. There's a lot of people of today that if somebody who is a Hall of Famer or somebody old school criticizes them, doesn't agree with, you know, their arsenal, how they wrestle, the comedy aspect, how they handle situations, these wrestlers will just shoot them down as out of touch, old man, you know, old woman, and they basically just get ignored, barred. You know, you see it happening a lot with Bischoff lately, more than anybody else, even though he's not a wrestler, but you get where I'm going with that. A lot of wrestlers out there will call out people from yesteryear, and a lot of fans of today will back up the wrestlers of today, which I totally understand because the wrestlers of today are the ones who are entertaining the wrestling fans of today. not necessarily the ones that are old school. But what AEW has been missing, and let's be honest, guys, what AEW has been missing is that person that will open his mouth, that will go against, you know, something that just sounds ridiculous, out of line, insurance risk, safety risk, something that is just not necessary. And again, Warner Media, Tony Khan, has a lot of investment with CM Punk. My problem with Tony Khan is that he never had a sit down with the roster and said, look, he is a veteran. He is the guy. Warner Media wants this him. I want him. All right. There's issues that have not been resolved with other people on the roster. However, Tony Khan wants to say it, but he needed to lay down the law that you got an issue, you know, you go to CM Punk, you go to this part, and a lot of wrestlers do not want to do that. They do not want to do that. And in today's entitlement with a lot of people, not just Karens, you know, we don't have people like that in AEW. So when Jack Perry just wants to use glass, I mean, I don't know, can't think of anything offhand in the past where he's used glass, but up until very recent, probably a lot of what these guys wanted to do, they just did. Tony Khan would trust him that, you know, they're not going to just go over the top and they, you know, they do whatever they do safe and nobody steps up and says no. Outside of CM Punk, guys, have you heard of anybody else, any other agents working behind the scenes who have confronted other wrestlers and said, no, you can't do that. No, that's not a good idea. No, we don't do that here. No, we don't. You don't ever hear that. But you hear it with CM Punk because there are a lot of people out there that don't like CM Punk. And it is no secret that, you know, certain members in management despise him. No matter how much money or ratings or attention he could bring to that company, that's not going to resolve things. It's an ego issue. It's all about ego. And CM Punk stepping up and being that guy to have these confrontations, that is a wonderful thing. That is a wonderful thing. That's why even more with the Hangman Page stuff last week. Now, as I said earlier, CM Punk did send a text message to Hangman Page apologizing, and there was a couple of reasons why he said what he said. I didn't see the text, so I'm not going to elaborate any further than that. But I will say this. We don't know behind the scenes if, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything, we don't know behind the scenes if Hangman Page continues to take shots at CM Punk. We don't know if behind the scenes the Young Bucks or anybody else behind the scenes or their friends are, you know, stirring shit up online, you know, against CM Punk because they know there's certain elements of the media that will push that agenda. So we don't know exactly what triggered CM Punk to say what he said. I wish he wouldn't have said it. I wish he wouldn't have said it. For whatever reason in his mind, try to maybe push something down the line, make a work shoot. I love the fact that he did not go to the media to explain his reasons behind it, because if there was something said and he goes public and he starts saying that these guys still don't want to shut the fuck up and they keep opening them out with others, here we go. You know, last year was all out. This year it's all in. You know, more confrontation. So day to day, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, everyone. We only know what is revealed publicly. And unfortunately, as you have seen over the last 7 days, if you would have accepted what was written a week ago about Ryan Nemeth and CM Punk, if you would have accepted what was written 6 days ago about Matt Hardy, Isaiah Cassidy being booked and unbooked from Collision, if you would have been left with 5 days ago, you know, some of the stuff that was going on, you know, with others, you would have been left with such an incomplete story that everything looks like CM Punk is a cancer. CM Punk cannot get this under control. CM Punk is causing more problems than he is helping. And look at the rating this week. Look at the rating this week. You know, last week, they were up against SummerSlam. So we knew the rating was going to be absolutely terrible. Most fans were watching SummerSlam, so it was affected big time. It was in the low fours. So we knew that it was going to rebound in some way this week. In fact, we even joked on Monday that the people who make the excuses for AEW or Gush will talk about how it went up, you know, a certain amount of percent, even though the overall number may not be very good. So what happened this week? The usual pundits who either praise AEW or make excuses for AEW all bragging that their rating was up 14%. But they didn't focus on the fact that Collision this week only did 476,000 viewers. 476,000. We're now back down to half mil fill. There was no SummerSlam this week. What was the competition up against Collision? The match 2 weeks ago, the main event, which was MJF and Adam Cole versus FTR, they did almost 900,000 viewers. Did people suddenly like drive home and say, I want to watch the main event and then go back out? People are home. That are wrestling fans, they're just not enticed enough for various reasons. When you see this climate online, you know, it just turns people off. Like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just not going to waste my time. But let's also keep reminding everyone a bigger problem. Even before Collision's debut, I said that it's going to be nothing more than a Saturday version of Dynamite. And that is what it is. Whether you want to admit it or not, it's a Saturday version of Dynamite. And that's not bad. It's not a negative thing, except they are repeating a lot of the same shit that turned people off, not only on Dynamite, but turned people off on Rampage. We are 2 months. Isn't it weird, guys? Last week, we focused on Powerhouse Hobbs and Miro. 2 months of Hobbs and Miro on Collision. And after 2 months, we had the same bullshit that was with those guys on Dynamite. In fact, worse, because it was supposed to be a clean slate for Miro, and he was used 3 times in 8 weeks, and his opponents were Anthony Henry, Tony Nese, and I can't remember the third person. And they've treated him like shit. Suddenly now, Hobbs lays out Miro. Coincidence? Probably. But pretty interesting that last week we call him out on those two guys and a horrendous treatment. But listen, you see that? Oh, the Acclaimed will talk. You know, Darby Allin and Sting reveal their tag partner, which, you know, really, nothing against Sting and nothing against Darby, but you know, the way they showed that on Collision, it just felt like, oh, they couldn't fit in it in Dynamite, so let's just throw it on Collision instead. A lot of what you see is the same. You get some different individuals involved, but even Chris Statlander. You know, we've confronted that. Her run is identical to Jade Cargill's. Has a match against somebody, wins it, following week cuts a promo, following week after that, beat someone. Someone random shows up down the rampway, lays her out. That leads to a match the following week. Then after that match goes down, maybe you get a tag match or she cuts a promo the week after. And next thing you know, 2-3 months go by and you're like, she hasn't really had a fucking feud yet. Her feud with Mercedes Martinez lasted, what, 2 weeks? You know, people see that the formula is the same. And the problem is, you know, when certain things have to be put on the show, you know, it's hard to change that aspect or that impression of it or the format. At the end of the day, this is Tony Khan's show. It's not CM Punk's or anybody else's. They're not going to go against the format and say, you know what, let's do this instead, let's do that. They may approach it a little bit different, a confrontation between maybe Punk and Ricky Starks. They may ad lib and go a little bit different. But at the end of the day, if they want to push this, 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 and this, you're going to get this, 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 and this. And Collision, just think about that. You know, 400,000 or 500,000 viewers. And you're getting supposed, and that's another thing with belts. You know, I like that Punk brought that belt back. You know, but it doesn't feel, you know, that that storyline's been pushed at all because MJF has not acknowledged it. They have not pushed that storyline on Dynamite. You know, why would MJF not say, who is this guy on the Collision to be doing that with the championship? You know, there's just a lot of inconsistency right now. And that 476,000 rating is pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. People will say, oh, the demo was 0.17. People will say, oh, the 18 to 49, they were ranked number 11 for the week. You notice how outside of wrestling, I'll give you a challenge, everyone. Go online and try to look up the ratings for Stone Cold Takes on America in recent weeks. Go try to find the ratings for WWE Treasures or whatever it is. Go on there and look at ratings for cable TV shows. You'll see it for news. But Zap to It, cable TV, I can't remember the one that recently shut down that was giving us wrestling ratings. You know, a lot of this is not even... People don't even waste their time anymore. You know, pro wrestling tries to find anything to latch onto to make something seem sweeter than what it is. And 476 is a disgusting number, in my opinion. So on Monday, we'll get into the quarter hour breakdown. We'll talk about what was the high point, the low point. You know, another problem with Collision is a lot of these match outcomes are very, very predictable. You know Chris Statland is not losing the title anytime soon. You know the House of Black was not losing the titles to CM Punk and FTR. You know that certain people are not losing their matches. So if you pretty much know who is going to win 99 times out of 100, you know, unless that match is really, really like one that you got to see, can't miss, you know, most people will just pass it up and say, oh, I already know who's going to win. You know, I'll read about it, and if it's interesting, I'll go watch it on YouTube or I'll watch the conclusion on Twitter. That is the mindset of a lot of people. With Dynamite, in a lot of ways, that's my mindset. You know, I do this on Wednesday afternoons now because, you know, I don't want to stay up until 3, 4 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday night to cover NXT and Dynamite when even the ratings, it is the third and fourth most watched shows on TV. Or maybe in some cases now, the fourth and the fifth, you know, as far as wrestling shows go. You know, I'd rather be more discussion than to just give you a recap and review of TV. Now, I have an announcement with regards to All In. Because I've been asked this question quite a few times the last couple of days. DT, are you going to cover All In? And the answer is yes, I will. And I've decided I will cover it Sunday, August 27th, which is the day that All In takes place. Now, it's happening, obviously, at Wembley. So that means in New York, AEW All In starts at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The pre-show is 12 noon. I normally do the sit-down podcast on Sundays at 8 o'clock at night. So we'll keep that same time spot, but we will discuss AEW All In. Now, I'm going to put a poll up on the YouTube community section so everybody has an opportunity to vote. If we dedicate the episode that Sunday just for All In, or if we kind of split it and do a little All In recap and also do a little sit down episode. I'll leave that up to all of you. But here's one of the most important things I need to let you all know about AEW All In. And this is something that a majority of reporters, podcasters, fans alike have not really thought about. And something you really need to know going into All In. I think a lot of people, it hasn't sunk in that 1 week later in Chicago, it is AEW All Out. So next Wednesday's Dynamite, which will be the 23rd of August, it'll be 4 days before All In, we'll get more matches announced, obviously. We'll get some matches announced tonight as well. But there's going to be some names notably absent on this card. That does not mean that they're not going to appear. Because you need to remember, All Out, their pay-per-view in Chicago is 1 week later. There will be things, twists, storylines, swerves, turns. There'll be major things going down at All In to set up All Out. That's something you got to think about, because usually on pay-per-view, the matches are the result of storylines and feuds, whether they're, you know, extended feuds or put together a week two in advance. Usually the pay-per-view is the result of what's built up to it. This time around, All Out, a lot of what you see in All Out is going to be the result of what happens at All In. So it's almost like a Dynamite on steroids. So that's something that we all need to remember. When we see the lineup for All In, once it's finalized, you're going to see some names absent. And some people will try to draw controversy to it. Some people will shit on it. But make no mistake about it, some of it is going to be by design to set up All Out. So there you go. That's when we will cover it. Now, this coming Tuesday will be NXT Heatwave. Now, NXT Heatwave will be on regular, you know, USA Network. You know, it's not a pay-per-view, but they have some interesting matches set up for it. I think it's going to generate a very solid rating. I mean, this week, I think their rating was 680,000. And it's kind of funny because people got spoiled with NXT, you know, getting these great ratings in the sevens, the eights, doing better, since some people like to compare the two, doing better than Collision. So they got used to seeing over 700,000 viewers, so now get 680, and like, wow, you know, big drop. 700,000 was never the norm for NXT. Dominic Mysterio plays a big role with that. That's why we bring up the high points and the low points of most of the shows that we cover with ratings. Because there are aspects of NXT that only draw in the fives and the sixes. And I can't wait to see these quarter hour breakdowns from this past week's NXT, because they did a little format repetition from the week prior. And I'm very curious to see if the same individuals we talked about last week drawing a weak number, draw a weak number this week again. And I think they will. I don't want to go any further than that. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, because if they end up drawing a solid rating, then okay, never mind. But yeah, there's a little pattern that we've noticed. And but NXT Heatwave, this is what we have lined up for this coming Tuesday, August 22nd. We got Baron Corbin versus Von Wagner. And we may see some interference with Bron Breakker. Noam Dar will be taking on Nathan Frazier for the Heritage Cup. Rhea Ripley and Dominic Mysterio will be having a mixed, well, I shouldn't say mixed tag, an intergen, no, yeah, mixed tag. I'm sorry. Intergender means guys and girls beat each other up. Now, yeah, Rhea Ripley will put her hands on Dragon Lee. But I would be shocked to shit if Dragon Lee puts his hands on Rhea Ripley or Dominic Mysterio putting his hands on Lyra Valkyria. Maybe they'll see distractions, but no, no. I still laugh. I mean, how long has it been since Rhea Ripley took on Akira Tozawa? And you had all those goofs online. Oh, they're finally bringing intergender wrestling to WWE. No, they're not. No, it says who. Says who. WWE was not. Now, once the TKO deal is done, that may change. But as of right now, I don't expect anything to change. But we're going to have a mixed tag match of Dominic Mysterio and Rhea Ripley versus Dragon Lee and Lyra Valkyria. And, yeah, that means Dominic is not putting his NXT North American Championship on the line. But now people think that Mustafa Ali may be the next in line to get that title, and I'll tell you why in a moment. Ilya Dragunov will be taking on Trick Williams, and then Carmelo Hayes will defend the NXT Championship against Wes Lee. Now, most people by now believe that the money match for Carmelo Hayes is going to be against Trick Williams. Trick Williams still has a little bit to go before that match goes down. So most people believe that Carmelo Hayes will retain. I got to be honest with you. I fucking enjoy Wes Lee right now more than I enjoy Carmelo Hayes. I watch the two. I kind of root for Wes Lee a little bit more. Doesn't mean I don't like Melo, but Wes Lee, you could see he's a special talent. Kind of reminds me of Ricochet, but maybe with a little bit more charisma. And that's not a knock on Ricochet, but I don't know. I look at Wes Lee, and then not because they're similar in size or physique. It's just something about him. But Mustafa Ali, he got a lot of attention on this past Tuesday's NXT. Because he brought back a storyline or a character develop change or tweak, you know, something that he pitched to WWE management a couple of years ago. And basically, Mustafa, and if you remember about a year and a half, was it a year and a half, 2 years ago, around that time, Mustafa Ali was doing these Twitter videos. Remember he was confronting, I don't remember who he was confronting. Might have been Miz, but he was ignoring Ciampa, and Ciampa kept laying him out. Remember that when Ciampa was showing up and laying him out and Mustafa Ali was doing these videos on Twitter? But we noticed, like, how come he's not addressing Ciampa at all in these videos? And then the storyline ended up being dropped. But one of the things that Mustafa Ali wanted to do was pitch himself more, almost like a presidential. Like he is better for the North American Championship, and it's being held hostage by Dominic Mysterio. It was so good on NXT. I loved what Mustafa Ali was doing. And, yeah, on the surface, I totally understand why people online yesterday were throwing it in the face of WWE. You see, Ali proposed this like a year and a half, 2 years ago. Why didn't you go with it? Why didn't you do this? Why did? And, you know, with all due respect, and I could have done a little bit of research tonight, but honestly, I think at the end of the day, most of you don't want to go that deep with this. But even if you do, you could do the research yourself. But one thing I will say, you know, when Mustafa Ali was pushing some of the ideas he was pushing, you have to remember at that time the championship titles and who had possession of them. At that time, Mustafa Ali, nobody felt there was ever any momentum that he could possibly win the Intercontinental Championship or the United States Championship. He certainly was not going for Roman Reigns' titles. He certainly was not going for the Usos' titles. The 24/7 title was a joke. So at that time, and I'm not making an excuse for WWE, but at that time, timing was probably the biggest issue for Mustafa Ali. If things are in motion, you know, even when you look at Gunther being the Intercontinental Champion, Gunther's been champion for a year, more than a year, you know, when you think about it. So if Gunther has that title for around a year, let's just stick it with that. You know, if the plans at that time, and I know some people can say, no, Vince, you know, was not high in Gunther. In fact, some people were saying he was going to be released. Yeah, if you go back and you look at those articles, these are the same people that have been telling you, you know, that Bray Wyatt's return is imminent every month since April. These are the same people that were telling you that Roman Reigns in May was preparing for Hollywood. These are the same people that are telling you a lot of things that ended up not being true. At that time, Ali came back to TV. And they were giving him a little bit of a push. You know, he was very, very serious. Then he was a little bit comical. If you remember the backstage segments, you know, it didn't really ever amount to any legitimate shot at a championship. NXT North American Championship is probably the best route for Mustafa Ali. And I know some people are going to say, man, that's sad because Ali is so much better than that. Well, you know what? You know, if you're going to play that game of comparing NXT ratings to Collision, you know, if Mustafa Ali was a champion on Collision that only drew 500,000-600,000 viewers, you know, would you feel that belt is more or less important based on a rating? You know, understand, the NXT North American Championship is a part of the WWE. The NXT Heavyweight Championship, the NXT Women's Championship is a part of WWE. So, yeah, it's one step below to Raw or SmackDown, but that doesn't mean that you don't have any worth. You know, Dominic, whether you like him or you don't like him, has done pretty damn good with that championship, and fans have been tuning in, and he's been a draw, and that's a good thing. You know what's been great also about Dominic and Rhea Ripley on NXT? Do you feel that anybody has been pushed out of a spot or off TV as a result of them being on? No. You know, in the past, with a WrestleMania, if you had a celebrity on WrestleMania, that might, you know, lead to someone else being off the card. That's why you've had CM Punk and Mark Henry and others over the years saying, you know, like, you know, they really didn't like the idea of a celebrity taking a spot that could be for someone who works their ass off all year long, you know, to be at WrestleMania. But with regards to NXT at the present moment, it does not feel that anybody has been slighted. Now, yeah, there's some women noticeably being used less on NXT. Gigi Dolan comes to mind almost immediately. But with all due respect, I do not believe Gigi Dolan would have had a much bigger role in the last month or two, even if Rhea Ripley was not showing up at all. There's nobody on that roster right now in NXT that I feel has been slighted because of Dominic Mysterio getting TV time. If anything, it's enhanced it. And it's nice to see that carry over. I like that WWE has enough confidence with some of these NXT stars, from Wesley to Carmelo Hayes to Lyra Vicaria, you know, to step it up and get a little bit of mainstream exposure. Because when you do put these main roster guys and gals on NXT, you are going to get some more eyes looking on the product. That does add pressure to some of the other wrestlers, like, okay, this week's rating might be an extra 100,000 people. I can't stink up the joint. That's something, you know, that definitely adds a little pressure to that roster. And that also could be part of the reason why we don't see some people on in the recent month or two. Because maybe they just don't want to put that added pressure on them. So we'll see what happens. But NXT Heatwave is next week. And it's a nice fun little card. I mean, it's not going to blow the doors off of the ratings, and you know, it's got some storyline progression to it, obviously. I'm very curious because they're supposed to do something with Ava Raine and Ivy Nile. And it's interesting because, you know, we see Ava Raine, who's the daughter of The Rock, and she's obviously, you know, still a long ways away from, you know, and I don't even know what you could call it. She's working, she's trying, she's committed to making this work. They're putting her in a pretty visible position at NXT Heatwave. So we'll see what goes down. You got to keep in the back of your mind, October is right around the corner, and the Dyad will be leaving. They will be exiting. So it doesn't surprise you that they have lost pretty much almost every match that they have had. In fact, I think the only match they won, didn't Ava Raine get the pin? It's, you know, when we look back on it. But NXT this past Tuesday, the 15th, you had Tony D'Angelo and Stacks retain the tag titles over the Dyad. Blair Davenport continues her winning ways, defeating Dana Brooke. Trick Williams over Drew Gulak. Wes Lee beat Dijak, as I said earlier, to become the number one contender to Carmelo Hayes' title. Tyler Bate versus Joe Coffey went to a no contest, and JC Jane over Thea Hale. Those were your match results. Before we get into quick results from tonight's AEW Dynamite, I wanted to give you some quick news with regards to Impact Wrestling. And anybody that's into wrestling figures, this is extremely disappointing. Now, some of you may know of the company Chella. I think it's Chella, C-H-E-L-L-A, Chella Toys. They did a bunch of wrestling figures. I know not too long ago we gave a couple of Adam Bomb figures away. In fact, Adam Bomb, you know, Brian Clark, very, very generous, gave me the first ever issued figure. It was actually number one. The first one that was ever produced, he actually sent to me, which I am honored to have. Chella Toys, I thought they had a lot of promise. And for those that are not aware, I'm not going to get into the story behind this, but those that are not aware, they were sold earlier this year to another company. And I think the company's name was Asylum. And, you know, you thought, okay, Chella Toys on a roll, bought from another company, and they're going to take it to the next level. And for the last couple of months, it feels like the complete opposite. And today, Impact Wrestling issued a statement that is going to disappoint quite a few people. Now, Impact obviously doesn't get the views or the exposure like AEW, WWE does, not even close. But the talent on the card, on their cards, is still strong, mainstream, and people do collect wrestling figures. And Asylum, formerly Chella Toys, was supposed to put out these figures for Impact Wrestling, and apparently now the deal is dead. Now, just to give you a perspective about this, they had already taken pre-orders for the figures. So that just gives you an idea that these figures were supposed to be available right around the corner, because you're not going to take pre-orders from fans, you know, unless these things were, you know, pretty close to being released. Now, my gut feeling tells me is that, you know, unfortunately for some small companies out there, they don't have a lot of working capital. So they need to depend on the money that comes in before they produce their items. I'll give you an example. The old Blackheart shirts that we used to sell through the hotline, that we used to sell a lot with the skull that said arson, damage, funker, zombie, because that was the four of us that did the hotline shows. We, at one point, went to a USA Pro Wrestling event, and we brought 50 shirts there. And we sold all 50, which was tremendous. But we had to lay out all that money up front to bring the shirts. And it's risky. especially when you buy a bunch of 4XLs and 3XLs. I mean, you don't know how many people, you know, going to buy, you know, certain sizes. So we went to USA Pro Wrestling with 50 shirts, and we got mostly XLs and a couple of 2XL, 3XL, 4XL, small, medium. We sold them. But the thing is, you know, we couldn't do that on a regular basis because you got to drop, you know, $1,000, whatever it is, you know, to get them all. And then you got to wait to sell them all before you get your money back and then some. So it the fact that they were taking pre-orders, to me, might be a little bit of a warning sign, because usually figures go on sale and you buy them. So it almost feels like they were taking pre-orders to get the money in there, so then they had the working capital to develop them. They were doing them on demand, might be a better way to put it. So Impact issued a statement today, and it said, Impact Wrestling regretfully announces that its scheduled action figures made by Asylum did not meet Impact standards nor the outlined time frame for release. Thus, Impact Wrestling is now in discussions with other action figure manufacturers for an upcoming release, and no Impact action figures from Asylum will be produced. All prepayments for the Impact action figures made by Asylum will be refunded in full. Refunds will start being produced at the end of August. Thank you for your understanding. That is pretty interesting, because Impact says that no figures will be produced. So I could only read between the lines and say that Asylum was taking way too long to come up with these. They must have come up with a couple of prototypes, and Impact were not impressed by them, and as a result decided, look, you know, we're pulling the deal. I don't know legally. I'm really curious what kind of contract Impact signed with Asylum, because you would think that, you know, then again, there might have been a clause in that contract that if Asylum doesn't deliver, let's say by August 14th, 2023, that the deal is dead. But that is not good. That is not good. You know, if there's a little delay, you just announce the delay. The fact that not only are they not allowing a delay, they're just pulling the deal entirely. Now you got to start from scratch. You got to start from scratch. They can't take a prototype and give it to another toy manufacturer and say, hey, make this. So, you know, I know not a lot of people are into collecting wrestling figures like we used to when I was a kid, but this is still a pretty big deal. And I'm a little bit surprised, but I wonder what the future of Asylum will be. And that's not trying to tease that, you know, they're in any financial disarray or something, but, you know, you would think, you know, Impact Wrestling, even though, you know, it's not what they used to be, there couldn't have been this insane demand for figures. So the fact that they just pulled the deal entirely, wow, it's pretty interesting. It's very interesting. So, well, I figured I'd let you all know, because some of you out there may, in fact, have placed a pre-order for some Impact figures. Now you know you better go get your refunds. You know, get them right away. All right, before we get into Dynamite, we got some breaking news. And I just got a DM from someone in Florida. I think if you've been following my coverage of Tammy Sitch's DUI trial, I have been talking to some people very, very close to that situation, wink, wink. And what we talked about a few months ago has happened. If you remember several months ago, I reported on this show, and I think we were exclusive on it, but, you know, I report to you. I don't report so other wrestling news sites can give us credit. That's why, you know, they'll never report what we talk about, because they don't want to give us credit. That's all good. But what we talked about ended up happening. If you remember several months ago, Tammy Sitch was trying to get a plea deal from the DA. And today, that plea deal was agreed on. Now, I will tell you, TMZ is not covering this. Something we talked about a few months ago, that the plea deal that was being discussed not only had to be approved or accepted by both parties, but the family of the 75-year-old that was killed as a result of Tammy. I think his name was Julian Lassiter. So the family had to sign off on this as well. Now, not, you know, in paper, in writing, because they really, they have nothing with this case. It's the state of Florida versus Tammy Sitch. Their case is, you know, for damages, financial damages. But the plea deal is, and I'm getting this literally as I'm doing the show right now, and it says, hey, Anthony, the plea deal that Tammy was negotiating has been accepted. Tammy Sitch agrees to plead no contest. Four counts of driving under the influence, causing damage to a person. She also pleads no contest to driving with a suspended or revoked license, causing the death of a person. She pleaded no contest of felony driving under the influence, causing the death of a person or persons. And two charges, she pleaded no contest for driving under the influence with damage to property. And that was obviously to Julian's car. I think there was another car involved in a much smaller degree. Now, as you see or hear, her boyfriend is not being charged or convicted in this case because it was proven pretty early on that he truly did. And I'm not sticking up for the guy. I talked to him quite a few times over the last year or so. But, you know, you got to call it like it is. And I always called it like it is as well. You know, he had no knowledge that she got behind the wheel and drove the car, causing that accident. That's why he was never charged with it. And that's why, you know, I don't believe he's part of the punitive case either. And he shouldn't be. He shouldn't be. I mean, I know a lot of people don't like him, and he's got a little bit of a checkered past, even admits it. And I'm not defending him or sticking up for him. He's definitely not someone that, you know, warrants sympathy. But he really should not have been charged in this, and he wasn't. So now the big question is, what kind of jail time is Tammy looking at? Now, she could face a maximum. It's either 24 or 25 years in jail. My gut feeling says that she gets somewhere between 8 and 15 years. And I know that's a broad timeline, but you got to understand, some of these charges, they could be a year apiece. They could be 3 years apiece. That's why there's that big discrepancy. I honestly think she probably would end up with about 12 years. I think about 12 years, because you got to understand, if she didn't have a history of DUI, if she didn't have that history, you know, it's still unacceptable what happened. But, you know, the court may show a little mercy on her, but she repeatedly, you know, kept getting behind the wheel under the influence. And the only way you stop her from getting behind the wheel under the influence is if she causes her own demise. You know, whether it kills her, you know, someone and spends jail time for the foreseeable future, or she causes harm to herself. So, you know, just a really, really sad situation if you really think about it. Now, I will obviously follow up. And I will try to find out when sentencing will be. Sentencing should not take all that long. Because the deal, listen, make no mistake about it. When you accept a plea deal, you have an idea of what kind of jail time that you're going to face. In fact, that DA would have told her lawyers what type of jail time they would recommend to the court. And the reason why I say it like that is this. If a DA wants you to get 25 years in jail, and that's the maximum you could face, 25 years in jail. If you feel that you may face 25 years in jail, your best chance is to plead not guilty and hope that the court cannot prove beyond a reasonable doubt on all the charges. You're not going to plead guilty or no contest and basically eliminate your chance of being found not guilty just to have the DA tell the court, we recommend 25 years. You understand what I'm saying? Like, if your penalty is, the only reason why you accept the plea deal is that the penalty will be reduced. And Tammy was facing probably the rest of her life in jail and did not want to take that risk. The writing was on the wall. She knows what she did. Her lawyers know what she did. The court was not going to have any sympathy on Tammy Sitch. So the only possible way that Tammy would eliminate that 25-year sentence is to work out a plea deal. I'm very curious to see what the reaction will be online because, and I'm not trying to besmirch any other journalists out there, but a lot of people do not know the legal system, and they're going to still report she faces 25 years in jail because they don't understand why you would even do a no-contest plea deal. So even if she was facing 25 years, the judge could still do whatever he wants. The DA could say to the judge, look, we recommend 12 years and, you know, whatever, attached to it. The judge could say, yeah, I want to give it 25. So the judge could do what he wants, but the judge usually will, if you work out a deal, the judge is involved with this. You know, the judge is aware that this deal is being negotiated. So I don't want to spend any more time on this right now, but I wanted you to give you this update since it was just DM'd to me as I was doing this show. Thank God I had Twitter in the background because that little one popped up and I clicked on it and like, Anthony, it didn't say DT. This person knows me by Anthony. But yeah, she pleaded no contest. They accepted the deal, which is very interesting. Very interesting that they worked out a plea deal. I'm very surprised about that. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit more on Saturday's Don Tony show since, you know, Wednesday's usually dedicated to NXT and AEW. But this is going to be a big story that's going to break tonight. And yeah, we'll go from there. All right, let's wrap this up with AEW Dynamite and an update on AEW All In. Because suddenly, hey, I recorded most of the show in the afternoon. And as I said earlier, you know how AEW announces matches a week or two before a pay-per-view. They usually wait to the last minute. We now have 9 matches announced. And honestly, from top to bottom, this is a pretty strong lineup. And it just goes to show you that dumb report earlier that people were worried about what Tony Khan was doing for All In. I even read a dumb report that some wrestlers are afraid that they're not going to live up to AEW expectations. What does that even mean? If the wrestlers are out there and they're putting on a banger of a performance, how are they not delivering? I don't know. I think people sometimes read this stuff and they don't actually let it sink in and they react to it and then realize later on, wow, what a dumb report. Anyway, Dynamite, oh boy, it had its good, it had its bad, and it arguably had the worst segment in AEW Dynamite history. I honestly think that Deathmatch with Jeff Hardy and Jeff Jarrett, if that would have been on Rampage, I think it would have been a little bit more accepted. But that honestly, I mean, unless I think of something else, I'm thinking back of Jade Cargill. I mean, the creation of the Mogul Associates when Keith Lee had a cinder block broken on his chest. Yeah, big motherfucker. I still... I can't think of anything that was worse than what we saw tonight in that death match. Oh, my God. Believe me when I tell you, I'm not exaggerating. That is probably, that's worse than WWE. I mean, when Leatherface came out with the chainsaw and they had the sound effect throughout the crowd, I got flashbacks of Shotzi from 2 weeks ago with the electric razor, and this was 1,000 times worse because there was simulated blood everywhere, and Leatherface looked like he was smaller than Jeff Hardy. It was awful. And you know what? I think Tony Khan realizes how bad that was. But, you know, again, if you want to look at it like this, all the proceeds of tonight's Dynamite are going to the Maui Food Relief, you know, to help the victims, you know, everybody who suffered in Maui, Hawaii. It's not profits, it's proceeds. That means any money that came in today. Yes, it's a tax write-off. We've talked about that before, but still, very, very generous on behalf of AEW and Tony Khan. But let me give you some quick match results, and let me give you the updated lineup for AEW All In, and then we get out of here. Orange Cassidy defeated Wheeler Yuta to retain the International Championship. Following the match, John Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli showed up, attacked Orange Cassidy. Best Friends made the save. Lucha Bros showed up, tried to get involved to even up the odds. John Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli get a bunch of chairs. Then suddenly Eddie Kingston's music hits, charges the ring, goes right at Claudio Castagnoli. Wheeler Yuta, Claudio, and Moxley go up the rampway. Eddie Kingston gets on a mic, challenges the Blackpool Combat Club and any other three members they can find to a stadium stampede match at All In. So now we have that added match. We still don't know the three other members of the Blackpool Combat Club. Some people may envision Bryan Danielson. Stadium stampede, don't have to, you know, do any high-risk moves. Got so many people involved. There's what, 12 people. Could they do it? Possible. You almost feel like Bryan Danielson has to be a part of history. I would not be surprised if Bryan Danielson is part of that. Hope he is. Kenny Omega is interviewed by Jim Ross. And the interview took place at Daly's Place, which is where Kenny Omega won his first championship. Kenny Omega wants to move away from Don Callis. Unfortunately, Don Callis interrupts the interview. Little distraction. This allows Jay White, Juice Robinson, to attack Kenny Omega. Takeshka shows up, and they sent Kenny Omega to the hospital. And this immediately leads to Hangman Page, who is outside the hospital having a beer. The beer has returned, everyone. And Hangman Page announces that at Wembley, it'll be Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, and Kota Ibushi, or as some people say, Ota Ibushi. They will be taking on Takeshka, Jay White, and Juice Robinson. So we have another match announced for All In. Then we get the segment with Don Callis and Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho was supposed to give his answer if he's going to join Don Callis's group. Jericho says yes, which Don Callis was very, very surprised at. Now, while this is all going on, there is a picture in the corner covered up, and they're about to go celebrate. Jericho notices the picture, and he says, "Hey, Don, you know, what's the picture? What's that all about?" And Don Callis is like, "Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it." No, Chris Jericho wants to see what the picture was. So they reveal the picture, and it's Don Callis. It's a painting. Don Callis holding the head of Chris Jericho. So Chris Jericho's like, "What the fuck is this all about?" And Don Callis said that he never thought that Jericho would say yes and join his group, that Jericho's ego would get in the way, and that's why he had that painting made up. So they were planning a hit job on Jericho tonight, but Jericho surprised Don Callis and, you know, agreed to be part of the family. So Don Callis slaps Jericho because Jericho's pissed off, calling him a piece of shit, an asshole. Takeshka shows up. Will Ospreay shows up. And Will Ospreay hits Chris Jericho with the hidden blade. Jericho is busted open. Don Callis smashes the painting over Jericho's head. And Sammy Guevara makes the save. And he chases them away. Little Sammy chant from the crowd. And that leads to another match at All In. Will Ospreay versus Chris Jericho. Darby Allin and Nick Wayne over Swerve Strickland and AR Fox. And I got to be honest with you, even though this was not that big of a deal, for me, it might be my highlight of the night. After the match is over, we see the video screen, and Sting has kidnapped Prince Nana. Now, you know my personal feelings about Prince Nana. Consider him a friend. Many, many years, used to do business with him. Love that guy's work. Ecstatic that he's getting to do it on a big platform. And the fact that Prince Nana is going to be part of the biggest wrestling event in history. Come on, man. Here in New York, that warms my heart big time. But he is on a couch with Sting, and we get a little glimpse of Joker Sting from TNA. He's got a little bit of that extra paint on his face. He's got that deranged look on his face, and he scares Prince Nana, who runs away, and it was a fun segment. I got to be honest with you, that might be my highlight of the night. Even though Adam Cole and MJF had some fun moments as well, they were preparing for their upcoming match at All In, which is at 0 hour, which, you know, again, look, you know, technically it's a dark match. You know, it is what it is. But they did some funny stuff because it's Aussie Open that they're facing. So they went to Outback. They were watching Crocodile Dundee 1 and 2. You know, all the stereotypical Australian stuff. MJF found a video of kangaroos fighting. And they come up with the idea that they should come up with a kangaroo kick as their finisher. Obviously, the crowd picks up on that right away. Kangaroo kick. Kangaroo kick. Then they found an inflatable crocodile. They clotheslined it. And Tony Khan gets a little cameo. He's kind of like a little annoyed at them for their antics. So then Adam Cole and MJF, they arrive at the building. MJF runs to the bathroom because some Nashville, Tennessee hot chicken did not necessarily agree with him. Adam Cole heads to the ring. Roderick Strong shows up, continues complaining, trying to warn Adam Cole. He's technically trying to warn the whole wrestling community because people still don't realize, my friends, never trust the snake, but that's okay. Roderick Strong kicks MJF's car and hurts his foot in the process. Then we get MJF and Adam Cole. They're in the ring. They cut a promo. Very, very cool segment. Adam Cole, you know, shooting, talking about his comeback. 9 months ago, his wrestling career was in doubt. Now he is going to main event the biggest wrestling event of all time as far as attendance goes, or paid attendance. Adam Cole, you know, cuts his promo. He needs to win this match and will do anything to do it. So people think, little heel turn tease there. MJF starts telling his little story back in 2018, putting 90,000 miles on his truck, touring all across the United States, trying to get his name on the map. He DM'd Cody Rhodes to get his shot, lost the opener for the first All-In. Tony Khan noticed him, signed him, and in 5 years, he's gone from a nobody to the biggest star on the biggest show of all time. For MJF, it means a lot to be in the main event against his best friend and dream opponent, but it doesn't mean everything. The Triple B means everything. Winning the main event at All In will make him legendary. And Aussie Open shows up. Little distraction. They attack Adam Cole and MJF, but Adam Cole and MJF get the upper hand, and they chase him away, and we go to commercial. Renee Paquette interviewing a Chris Jericho, a bloody Chris Jericho, who is very, very pissed off, and reminds everyone that Chris Jericho versus Will Ospreay would have happened at the Tokyo Dome in 2021, but due to COVID and the pandemic, it didn't happen. But it's going to take a lot more than a pandemic to keep Chris Jericho from kicking Will Ospreay's ass at All In. So that match is set. As I said earlier, the worst segment in AEW Dynamite history. Jeff Jarrett defeats Jeff Hardy in a death match. We had interference from Satnam Singh. We had interference by Karen Jarrett. Sonjay Dutt. Jay Lethal. It was just a fucking mess. I mean, I can't even put into words how bad this was. It was bad already. But then at the end, because this is to hype up the video game, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I guess it's a video game, right? Leatherface comes out, and you hear this loud chainsaw throughout the building. And remember, Jeff Jarrett said that he was going to have Leatherface at his side. So we think he's coming out to help Jeff Jarrett defeat Jeff Hardy. But he immediately attacks, didn't he hit Sonjay Dutt? And he chased Karen Jarrett away. It looked like a bad horror film. And what happens? Jeff Hardy is distracted. I think Jeff Hardy realized, what the fuck am I involved in here? Turns around, Satnam Singh is behind him. Chokeslams Jeff Hardy. Satnam Singh puts Jeff Jarrett on top of Jeff Hardy. And Jeff Jarrett then celebrates after the match with a Leatherface title belt. Please do not tell me they're going to start bringing on another fucking title belt. I don't think so. This obviously was just to hype up this Texas Chainsaw match, but it was just awful, everyone. It wasn't even funny awful. It was awful. I really want to see those out there that make an excuse or praise everything about AEW. I got to see them make an excuse for this one. Even them, I can't see them giving an excuse. Other than if they say, well, you know what? Fight for the Fallen. They're donating all the proceeds to Maui. You know, that's what matters at the end of the day. Okay, whatever. As we expected, Britt Baker defeats the Bunny. So Britt Baker advances to All In at Wembley. She will be part of the four-way for the Women's Championship. The Acclaimed was supposed to fight two local wrestlers. Did not happen. Right before the match started, the lights go out. And when they come back on, the House of Black is in the ring. Buddy Murphy and Brody King, to be more specific. They are beating the shit out of the Acclaimed. Malachi Black is just watching. Julia Hart is just watching. And Max Caster was busted open big time with a chain. And with the Acclaimed laid out in the ring, Brody King presents Malachi Black with Billy Gunn's boots. So now, are they possibly leading to the House of Black versus the Acclaimed and the return Billy Gunn for the Trios Championships? Maybe. Remember, I think a lot of people keep forgetting that 1 week after All In, we have the All Out pay-per-view. So things that are happening tonight doesn't necessarily mean it all leads to Wembley. So it is possible. Oh my God, I sound like Brian Alvarez. It is possible that CM Punk will not return to AEW. It is possible that Cody Rhodes did not sign with the WWE and will not appear at WrestleMania 38. It is possible. Oh, God. Let's leave it at that. So, main event tonight, actually rather bland. A little short. Not a lot of controversy coming out of it, really. The Young Bucks beat the Guns. Now, some people think this is going to lead to Bullet Club Gold against the Young Bucks at All Out. Now remember, they get the tag title shot against FTR at All In. Could they be facing Bullet Club Gold at All Out? It's possible. It's possible. But the match tonight with the Guns, a little short. I think this Texas Chainsaw Massacre shit probably went on a little bit too long. But, you know, it was an interesting episode of Dynamite. Obviously a hot mess because, like I said at the beginning of the show, and I'm no genius. You all know this as well. AEW is notorious. They do it every time. We get a week, 2 weeks before a pay-per-view, and then they start flooding all new matches. And they did that tonight. We had technically five new matches added to All In. And again, when you look at this card up and down, it's not a bad card. It's not a bad card. I don't know what people were talking about earlier that, you know, this is, you know, going to be concerning, that AEW wrestlers are worried, that Tony Khan, they're worried what he's presenting and they may not live up to their expectations. What are they talking about? Anyway, here is your updated lineup for AEW All In. This is not the final card, but we do have eight matches announced. And obviously, next week, we will get at least two or three more, minimum. Now, I will tell you this. Nothing was announced for Rampage tonight. So right now it's, you know, whatever they're going to do, I'm sure it'll be all right. But you know what? I think it's being taped tonight. So if anybody checks out, you know, social media late tonight, people who are in attendance probably will post the spoilers for you. So anyway, for the Ring of Honor tag titles, MJF and Adam Cole will challenge Aussie Open. And that will be your pre-show match. My honest opinion, Aussie Open will retain. There'll be a little bit of a clusterfuck finish. Maybe Adam Cole inadvertently hits MJF or vice versa. Leads to a little bit of friction. Sets up the main event later on. FTR will be defending the AEW Tag Team Championships against the Young Bucks. Hikaru Shida will defend the AEW Women's Championship. She will be defending against Toni Storm, Dr. Britt Baker, and Saraya. In a coffin match, a tag team coffin match, Darby Allin and Sting will be taking on A.R. Fox and Swerve Strickland with Prince Nana in their corner. Six-man tag team match, we have the Golden Elite of Kota Ibushi, Kenny Omega, and Hangman Page. They will be taking on Juice Robinson, Jay White, and Konosuke Takeshita. Will Ospreay will be taking on Chris Jericho. We will have a stadium stampede match involving Eddie Kingston, the best friends of Chuck Taylor, Trent Beretta, and Orange Cassidy, along with the Lucha Bros. They will be taking on John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, Wheeler Yuta, and three additional partners. And then your main event, MJF, will be defending the Triple B, the AEW World Championship, against Adam Cole. So that is your current lineup. That was your Dynamite results for tonight. And that was your latest episode of Wednesday Night Dynamite. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget this Saturday, if you are interested, and up at 12 noon Eastern, I will be doing your latest edition of the Don Tony Show. If you are online or even if you're watching TV Friday and you want to chat, this Friday, the 18th of August, I will be bringing back the SmackDown Watch Party one more time. Edge, we will be celebrating the 25-year anniversary of Edge, who will be taking on Sheamus, and there's a lot of rumors that he might retire on Friday. Plus, we'll have LA Knight. We'll see the next progression in the Bloodline storyline. If you want to be part of my watch party, it is playback.tv/Don Tony Show. It is free. And if you join the watch party, you can watch SmackDown. You don't just watch me. You know, YouTube with the watch-alongs, you only watch the host, and the host talks about the wrestling event. Here in a watch party, you actually watch SmackDown. Yeah, you'll see a tiny little round circle with my head live, moderating it, chatting with you. But even if you don't watch SmackDown through your computer, watch it on your television at home. But stop by the chat. You can mingle with me and others during the 2 hours. I am there live for the 2 hours, and we'll see what the turnout is. You know, the turnout last week was a little bit mild, but a lot of people claim they totally forgot that I was doing it. So now we have a big event coming up, Edge possibly retiring, 25-year anniversary. So let's see what the turnout is this Friday. If it is light once again, that is your last watch party. If the turnout is nice, then we will continue them for the foreseeable future. And then next week we have your regular shows. Sunday we'll have the sit-down, and it goes on and on and on. Keep supporting the website, DonTony.com. Even if you enjoy the video versions of what I do, download the audio episodes. That's what keeps what I do alive. That keeps us relevant in the standings and the stats. And it is free, obviously, and it is very much appreciated. So you all have a great rest of your week. I hope I could get a chance to see some of you Friday during the watch party. If not, stop by during the weekend. We'll be doing shows on Saturday and Sunday. Be well, everybody. Take care. Talk to you soon.
That was cool. Yeah.